I think it's there's very little sense that pain and fear are useful. I think we have attitude that they're not useful. A lot of our life is that you get rid of pain, you get rid of fear. And yet, if you don't have pain or you don't have fear, you're at a remarkable disadvantage. If you don't have a sense of pain, you don't know when you're hurt. You don't know when the water is too hot. You don't know that you picked up the wrong end of the knife. It's very dangerous not to have a sense of pain. And fear is the pain of the mind, in a certain way. Fear lets you know in your mind when something is arising in your consciousness that is not within the comfort zone you're familiar with. Pardon? Yeah, it can be. Like pressure could be pain. Yeah, to a degree. Absolutely. And as such an indicator of, you know, of how the inner, you know, the outer experience is impinging on one's being, mental for fear, physical for pain, is a very useful tool. Then how you use it, that's a whole other thing. So I think often we feel like when there's fear, we're supposed to bowl right through. You know? I know that I used to feel like that all the time. If there was fear, I remember I used to have this very strong fear arise whenever I was in water that went over my head. I think they call it a phobia or something when it happens or something. So when I decided that I didn't like being that, I was determined not to do it. I used to literally, as I was saying earlier, jump in the deep end. Because it was wrong, see, that I should do that. So consequently, I had very little compassion, ruined the lives of lots of afternoons of, you know, lifeguards who were busy checking their tan and flexing their muscles and just trying to have a good time at the pool, you know. And then this woman would come and jump in the deep end and go flash about, go into a full fetal position, lose consciousness, and curl up and sink. You know, it was not what they really wanted to do. And undoubtedly, because I splashed around quite a lot before the fetal position part took over and I sank, you know, probably a lot of little kids were properly traumatized. You know, I mean, you know, not skillful is what you call that. You know, it's not what necessarily what you do with fear. I mean, when there is fear, you consider it as like physical pain. And you work with it in that same way. You try to be aware of what it is. You don't like freeze on pain, right? You try to figure out, okay, what is it that's going on here? What is the pain? Oh, I've closed my finger in the car door. Yes, that's quite painful. So with fear, you try to see it, and then you want to see it in terms, not just like getting totally zeroed in on it, you want to keep the mind open, have that spaciousness involved with it as well. So sometimes it's very useful to think with this fear. It's not uncommon that other people are also afraid in the neighborhood. Sometimes that isn't so clear. I have been walking in places where it was very clear that there was memories in the continuum of the being that didn't have to do with this lifetime that would be suddenly triggered. And there's great waves of fear with a very, you know, and the vision would change and so forth. There's other memories access. And so that was, everybody else was just having a nice day. So sometimes that's not true, but most of the time, it is true, isn't it? Most of the time, you're not the only one experiencing that fear. So to actually allow yourself to acknowledge that it's a good thing to feel fear, it's useful, this is a tool of your own psyche, for you to be able to really pay attention and decide how to use the moment. And see what it is that is causing the fear, And if you're having a little trouble focusing perspective, then immediately be aware that a lot of people feel fear. But don't let it close you in. Don't let it close you in. Is that straightforward? So I find that very useful. Then specifically, you know, there are a lot of ways that you can... One of the things that I also found very useful was, did you know the Buddha had migraine headaches? Isn't that nice? I think so, because I have migraine headaches, you know? Oh, good, the Buddha had the flu. Did you know the Buddha felt fear? Oh, good. We're in good company. He said that when he was sitting and moving the consciousness to awakening, when he was choosing to move out of clinging to a personal identity, to the state of totality, that the fear was so great that the actual hair on the back of his head stood on end. Well, that's what you would call fear. I would call that fear. And what an interesting idea that a hero would be so stupid. Isn't it? What an interesting idea that a hero would be so stupid that they wouldn't know when the situation was dangerous or painful. That they would be operating as a hero with, like, without all their senses working for them. Isn't it? Very, very, very interesting idea. But where, you know, the difference between not feeling fear. I had a friend who couldn't feel fear. And he died in a motorcycle accident. He was 27. Because he was brought up to believe that you shouldn't feel fear. He had no protection. So therefore he had no skill. So therefore he had no way of helping other people who were in fear. He had no compassion. I know, and out of kindness for those who taught you that, it would be nice for you to take the fear and use it with compassion and offer that to them, that they don't have to do too many more lifetimes without pretending that there is no such thing as fear. And that can be a gift back up to the line of ancestors. Thank you for the gifts you've given me, and the ones that I'm not using, I send back to you. And if you want to send them back to whoever gave them to you, please do so. I wish not to be encumbered by what you couldn't solve, because I realize it doesn't need solving. May you also realize that. I don't know if this is at all in the direction of where you want to talk about it, or do you want to hear someone else with it? First thing is to let yourself off the hook. Because without being able to feel fear, you have lost part of your intelligence. Fear is what sharpens our ability to pinpoint, become aware, so that you can have greater awareness, so you can have greater skill, so you can have greater compassion. To not get swallowed by the fear, absolutely, but that's why you use the sense of space, you use your whole body. When you're grounded, the fear can come, you can put it, move it right down your feet and share it with the earth will ground you, you've got the energy of fear, but you're not going to... Great energy here, isn't it? Very strong. So how to keep it grounded so that you can use it for the benefit of all beings. That's the point. Do not feel it. I don't think it's possible I think somebody can decide that they don't want to feel it. I have people, like I said, my friend who died in a motorcycle accident. He was very, he was raised by a family who really thought males should not ever feel fear. And so that's what he did. He was, and he couldn't feel a lot of things. It was very hard for him to be satisfied with him. So he's driving it. He's standing on the deck of a freighter. He, he steps over the railing and stood on the outside. I think he was always trying to feel. I don't say it surprised me, but saddened me. Precious human being. I think realizing what a gift here is, it goes a long way. We're breaking down that conditioned view. And like I said, my parents weren't fully awakened beings. And I know that's probably a shock to everyone here, because I know you probably also all have fully awakened parents, fully awakened beings as parents. But maybe you'll notice one or two things that they didn't know. That you know that they didn't know. And maybe that one of the things that you know that they didn't know is that fear is actually useful. Yeah, because they lose themselves. They just sort of, like me diving into the deep end, I am going to overcome my fear. I don't think so. What a clever idea, little Scorpio. The memory surface. How did the memory surface? Right. And then the memory arose. Right. So that's the circumstance of life presenting the option to heal it. Yeah, which is wonderful. So what happened then? So, but then why don't you have her work from different parts of her body? Because the part that's talking about it is the part that's fixated on me and it. But maybe looking at it from another part, you find that part that is not the separate thing. I'm not going to put this very well. But you could feel the difference when you approach from different sides of your body. Whatever it is we think we've split off, it's not actually split off. It's part of ourselves. We decide we don't want to know something that has happened. That's like making a big mark against creation, right? Because we cannot bear it. So in order to bear it, you have to have an experience to take refuge in. Is that right? In order to bear, we split off an experience because we feel we cannot bear it. Because the suffering of it, the pain of it, is so great that we feel we can't bear it. So we split it off. That's called trauma, right? In order to bear it, but yet it is still true. What we've done is split one part of ourself from another part of ourself. Is that true? It's the experience of our being, and we're denying that it exists, right? So we have split one part of ourself against another part of ourselves. So at some time or other, when there is going to be the need to be able to find out how to knit those two together, or how they can, there can be no longer a split in one's own being, Sandra and another. If there is some type of refuge that is greater than both, it's easier to do that. What's your problem? I'm not talking about her. I'm talking about if there is some kind of refuge. I'm not talking about her. You and I are talking. Then the next question is there such a refuge? Is there in your way? Are you sure? Maybe that's where the work is. Do you think that's possible? We're never talking about her, are we? Not really. We're always talking. We're like we should. Always true. And to open the heart to that is the first step toward refuge. To open the heart to that fear that maybe there is no refuge. It's the first step of refuge. When you open the heart to that. And it takes many beings to feel that way. And immediately the space opens, and for many beings there's a light above you. You don't have to put a name to it. Somewhere in the boundless experiences of the continuum of beings that created you, there is an experience of love that is not deniable. That's the doorway to the memory of refuge. You hold to that, open that door, you experience the refuge energy that is coming through that door, and she finds refuge. Is that reasonable? I always like to be reasonable. I do like to be reasonable. Reason is so delicious, isn't it? And that applies, doesn't it? To the fear. Then, it's like once you acknowledge the feeling, then you also acknowledge that it is more than that. Then the door opens to refuge, which is where we're going now. Because that is deity yoga. All the wholesome actions that have ever been performed by all beings everywhere in the universe. All of the wholesome actions that you have performed today, the small ones that you didn't even know, feeding the various microbes, just making sure those mitochondria keep ticking away in your system. All those bacteria and viruses you're feeding with every breath. Billions and billions and billions of moments of kindness, just by inhalation and exhalation, just by blinking your eyeballs, by walking down the street or by not walking down the street. All of the moments of kindness, of the kind thoughts, the kind speech, the kind action. Imagine what we've done to the bacteria in the sewers today. Just giving them real food, haven't we? How very kind you are. All of the kind actions of body, speech, and mind that we have performed today, multiplied by all of the kind actions of anybody in this city of Hobart, multiplied by all the kind of actions of any fish in the ocean around Hobart, Ooh, we're getting big time now. The whole planet, all of the kind actions. Name them, acknowledge them, be clear about them, put your focus there. Having established faith, having established the spaciousness of consciousness from doing loving kindness and then compassion. Now you take that spaciousness and you put your focus, you put your perception on all of the wholesome actions that have ever been performed. This is going to give us a golden ground on which to stand. This gives us the power to believe in it. Not by looking at the terrible, but by acknowledging the goodness of your own heart, you find a doorway to refuge. Sometime or other, somebody is always going to be stronger than you or I. That the good doesn't belong to him. Stand on the unpollutable beauty of the whole thing. Name it, know it there. That is the foundation, that is the land on which you stand. Get a sense of that, all of the kind actions of all the beings who built this building, all of the kind actions of them with all of their children, all of the billions of kind actions of all the beings who have ever walked across this floor and have left a sense of their energy here. Okay? There are a lot, many ways to look at it, you know. You can do it historically. Think of the people who were the builders and the kind actions of the history of building from the first, you know, ape who picked up a coconut and slammed it against a tree and it broke open and he said, aha, cool! Or whatever. Whatever your favorite theory is. All those kind actions. It's just an amazing opening. It's the power of it. It's like supporting us. That's really beautiful. You have a sense of that, and then you have a sense of being able to take that energy of goodness and offer it to the source of all goodness. So you can do it by doing mandala offering. It's a really neat little thing. Do you know mandala offering? You ever heard of that? Some of you have, some of you have Tibetan background, some of you don't. The Tibetans, they do this thing I call the foundation work. And then there are different ways of doing it, but basically it's usually four things. The first prostration. Prostration is basically the body level. It's equivalent in the four foundations of mindfulness, awareness of the body in the Theravada system of Buddhism. It's basically like teaching yourself how with the body to be present. You know, so what you do is you go to ground. You let go of the past, you let go of the future, so that of course you collapse, right? There you are, right there in the middle of presence on your knees, right? At which point you actually know where ground is. It's very similar to four foundations of mindfulness. The first one is awareness of the body. You say, you keep bringing your mind back again and again to the breath, and after a while you realize that there is no past, no future, and you just absolutely let go of all your sense of self. Whether it's just the eternal presence. Whether it's body or not, it's hard to say when you actually do it. The same with prostration. You know, a very similar kind of action. So you do 100,000 of those. After you've done 100,000, you begin to get the idea. Everything comes into existence. I really hate these prostrations. I really love these prostrations. I really don't care one way or the other about these prostrations. I really am glad they're doing prostrations. I really wish nobody ever did prostrations. I wonder if elephants do it. Oh, I'm going to do this prostration for all the dentists in the universe. You know, and you run through them all, you know, because you have to do 100,000 of the suckers. So, you know, you pretty well do your mind every possible way until eventually you just prostrate. Okay? Eventually you do, don't you? Eventually. And by the time you get to that point, you actually like doing it. Like you do. It's just like moving the energy to surrender and then to rise again with a new understanding. Surrender the old, arise with a new understanding. Surrender the old. This is very much like watching for. Surrender the last thing you know and arise with a new meaning. Surrender and rise. Surrender and rise. So you do 100,000 of those, it's called prostration, and then the next thing you do is 100,000 of a meditation called Vajrasattva, where you image the consciousness that is pure from the beginning, consciousness without waves. Remember me talking about, for most of us, the consciousness is like this lake that gets broken up by the different winds. Remember me talking about that? And so you get these fragmented views, and what your first rule of the yoga is to still the mind. Patanjali, still the waves of the mind, still the waves of the mind. Yeah. So when you have the mind filled of its waves, that means you're not dashing after every thought or trying to do, you actually have a little moment of spaciousness to see that reflected truth, reflected wisdom. That mind, that is that stillness, is like one picture, right? It's not broken up by the waves. It's not waves aren't playing, so it's like one reflective. So you have like, now you have mirror-like wisdom. That mirror-like wisdom in its full expression, before it is in mind-body, it's called Vajrasattva. It's like the state of what your original consciousness really is. You're not separate from that. Vajrasattva is not separate from who you are. And so the second practice, second of the foundation, is this interesting to you? I kind of gotten off on a little trip here, and I hope if this is not interesting, I'll stop. Okay, so Vajrasattva is basically you image, you say, you know, the usual things you kind of say that out of the ground, you know, I empty this, all this, all this, all this, all this, all this. Void state, you know, like looking at the spacious nature of existence, that is to say there is no permanent identity of the self. We've all noticed that. There's a continuum. But who were you this morning when you were stumbling out of bed to go to the bathroom? Is that who is sitting here now? Is that somebody different? Are you the same person that went out for lunch? But there's a continuum, but it's a different quality. And not just because you ate. Different experiences. Buddhism, they say, the sense of self arises based on three things. Present supporting circumstances, propensities of the past, and focus. Present supporting circumstances change, self changes. My sister, the CPA, is not the same person as when she's holding one of her grandchildren. Two very different people. Me playing Nintendo and me talking to you, it's very similar, but there are differences. And you know that too. The self is continuously changing. There is always a self and it's always dissolving in circumstances. So you say the impure vision of subject and object dissolves into emptiness, including the sense of yourself and the sense of all the thingness that you're continuously projecting out there. And you just allow yourself to be aware that there isn't really any fixed identity in anything. Just let everything kind of kaleidoscope a little more. Let the mind relax and avoid nature. And from this state arises the ground. And so now this is the ground that's where you arise, deity yoga. Usually shaded blue with bright golden patterns because it's usually in one of the pure realms that we have most of the deities dancing around in. I guess we get a good tax break there or something. I'm not sure why they all live there, but they do. Who knows? And then this lotus arises, which lotus, you know, comes out of the mud. And it struggles up through the mud, and it goes through the muddy water, and It keeps struggling through the muddy water. It doesn't stop there either until it transcends its origins and it goes through the surface of the mud and it opens above the surface of the water. So the lotus is that which is growing in you and I from the mud. The seed that we don't even know is there in the mud, that is reacting to the light that we don't even know is there either. It's slowly making its way out of the mud in one level into the muddy water where these currents are pushing. It still goes up, still following the light, although it's kind of tempting to follow the currents a bit, but you know, it opens when it opens in a circumstance that is totally transcended of what it's done before. Always above the water, always pure. But basically called let me go there. Okay, and then on top of that, there's usually a moon disc, which would be representing the mind that desires to awaken for the benefit of all beings, the reflected light. The individual naming the sun, the reflected light, the planetary light, you know, the orbiting light, the reflective light, the moon disc. And then sitting on that is usually a C syllable, and on that C syllable goes, you know, in the beginning was the word of, boom, and all of a sudden his body stuff is sitting there, and he's got this white body, and he's gorgeous. It's like, quite gorgeous. Why are you smiling? He's imagining the way a Scorpio would be saying gorgeous to you. And he represents that mind that is impossible to enter, that part of your consciousness that has never lost touch. And what you do is you make a prayer for that part of yourself. And you say, you know, to now from beginning of this time, there have been countless unwholesome actions performed. Would you say that's true? Would you say that in a day you probably have more unwholesome thoughts than wholesome thoughts? Would you say that? I would say I do. And to now from beginning this time, countless unwholesome actions have been performed due to ignorance of body, speech, and mind. A lot of them are probably going to write that.
Really don't want to do that.
Please, Vajrasattva, help me to be clear of such thinking. Please, Vajrasattva, help me to wash away the results of this way of being. Help me to wash away the unaware. And then, so in Vajrasattva's heart, there is this energy starts circling around. It's sort of like a butter churn, and this like energy goes, fills up his body, and it pours out his pores, and it drips down over him. It washes over you. And all the things you're clinging to just drop away. Yeah, I'll get washed away, and underneath you, this pit opens for all the beings who, you know. You ever know anybody in your life who you feel like, oh God, there's them again, and you feel like you're kind of sticky, they're going to try to get something from you, or they want a little more time from you? Anybody ever meet anybody like that in your life? They're called karmic debtors. There is some debt that is between you. Whether they think so, or you think so, or you both think so, is not the issue, but there is this feeling like there is a debt, and it's a karmic debt. And so you imagine them all, or someone that you feel like they owe you something. Somebody who took something from you once, 20 years ago or something, you know? They owe you something. They're karmic debtors too, because they're hanging you up there. So this pit opens beneath you, and there's all those karmic debtors going, this is what they basically do in your consciousness, don't they? And all this nectar comes off Vajrasattva's body, pours out all his pores, it runs down over the lotus, and picks up all your clothes, all your adornments. You just let go of all the things you're clinging to in the moment. It goes down there, washes in, and so these karmic debtors are absolutely delighted. Oh, finally. Finally, I got her a topaz. Yeah, I've been wanting it for... And meanwhile, they swallow all this nectar. So they get what they want and they get what they need. And then your skin gets washed away, or your sense of separateness.
I am not them. Of course, I am not a karmic debt to anyone. I don't hold grudges.
Mm-hmm. And your flesh gets washed away. All the little good things that you hold about yourself, you know, it's nice, soft, cushy kind of mentality about yourself. Your nice, warm, cozy feelings, and they all get washed away. Give them away. And your bones get washed away, and they all go into this pit, you know, and these karmic debtors are going yum, 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 you know, chewing it off. And that's all your hard-nosed views about what we should or shouldn't do. They all get washed away right into the pit. Good, eh? And then the nectar actually is like finished, you know, that's the whole kind of contrived aspect of your image of yourself has just been washed away, so it's just now essence energy of you left. And so now the nectar comes into the top of your head and washes through your body. And where any kind of illness, any imbalance of the elements, just like moves, permeates all the cells of the brain, just washes, goes flowing through, like through the sinus. Any orifice, like anything is pushed out, you know, like this kind of gooey mass pushed out, they just run down to their karmic debtors too. They just go numbers, numbers, numbers. They couldn't be happier. It's like taking figs from McDonald's. Very weird stuff. Anyway, they love it. And you just keep moving that nectar right through, washing out all kinds of illness or imbalance of elements, any kind of dis-ease. And then you wash away all kinds of unwholesome influences. And then you wash away all propensities, your habits that you'd rather not be carrying on. Wash them all out. At which point, things are pretty clear. And so the pit beneath you closes because all those karmic debtors there, they've been transformed into Buddha nature, of course. That much nectar, they pretty well have to. And they all depart to various Buddha realms, and so like, the pit just closes up. That's done for that day. And your body is like crystal, and you say, you ask Vajrasattva to continue to be your protector, to continue to look over you with kindness, and to help you maintain the clarity of mind and the sense of gratefulness. And Vajrasattva looks at you in warmth and love and joy for your willingness to be present. His joy comes so great that his whole body dissolves in light, and that's absorbed into your body. Your body becomes like a crystal. So Vajrasattva, that's the second. That says emotional clearance. You may notice. First one sort of puts your body where you are. The second one sort of gives you a real sense of like forgiving yourself in a certain way, and finding the inner of your being. Does much more than that. It's also a principle in the universe. Vajrasattva is a principle. You are calling on it. You are doing ablutions, absolution, and so forth. No question that it works for that. If you have like diseases like cancer, things like that, do lots of Vajrasattva. Very useful. If you have like traumas that really need working, very useful. Do lots of Vajrasattva. Really a wonderful, wonderful practice. If you want to do Vajrasattva for a whole area, you can imagine it over a forest that has been burning. It's a very, very useful practice. Vajrasattva, if there's like murder or something in an area, like you go and do Vajrasattva practice, it helps the energy in your shoes. It reduces a lot of the health things. Vajrasattva is very, very useful. So the next one is called mandala offering, which was the point of this whole thing. It wasn't. Mandala offering is okay, now you've done prostrations, you have this sense of letting everything go, moving, and then the next moment being born again, more and born again, born again. And then the motive being more like for the benefit of all beings, I'm not holding anything, right, letting go, like it's holding. And the clarity of moving the mind to the Vajrasattva purity, And then, and so then now you're ready to do mandal offering. So now you look at the mind state, so you say, this is the pure ground. This is the pure ground. This is the pure ground. And the ground is sprinkled with scented water and strewn with flowers. And this is the ground, and within this ground there are these different mind states that arise, and the first one is adorned with Hong, with Mount Meru, but usually there's a Hong first in the center. And it's like, and all these possible mental propensities are present in my being. Everything from mass murderer to magnificent saint, and what I want to do is to take that and make that the center of the universe, and then raise it as the aspiration to awaken for the benefit of all beings. That's what mandala offering is. You're allowing, having now, you know, allowed yourself to see all of the possible propensities of your mental propensities, and that this precious human life is precious, and you want to take this with all of what it is and move it for the benefit of all beings. So it's an offering. Mandala offering. Offering the mandala of your life for the benefit of all beings. Without leaving any parts out of it. So having done that, then the next thing that happens in the fourth part of the foundation work is called Guru Yoga, which means that you get an answer. You know, if you ask a question, you do get an answer. With body, speech, and mind, you've asked a question. Now you get it. And the answer is where the I truly becomes able to surrender to that which is greater, which then gives it birth to us. What was the difference? From the birth of self-clinging to the birth of incarnation, which is what the whole process of deity yoga and tantra is about. Learning how to take the principles that we do have, see the mystery we really are, have respect for what we really do have, as our power, our potential, the gift that we are, regardless of how it's wrapped. Sorry, you don't like the paper. I promise you, the gift is magnificent. Concepts and likes and dislikes without destroying anything, without destroying the paper, without destroying the band, and open the consciousness to that which is greater than self, which is not separate. And that is the work of Tantra. Is that a reasonable description of the foundation work? Why did I get into that? No, there was some question. What was the question that launched me in that direction? Yeah, I remember that far back. I thought there was refuge, right? Oh yeah, refuge. Yeah. And that all of us do know that there is refuge. All of us can feel it in the very heart of our being. All of us know that. All of us know that the wholesome is greater than the unwholesome. All of us know that, whether or not we're willing to trust our knowledge. That's another question. For some of us, we're not willing to trust that the world is going to let it happen. For some of us, we're not sure whether it's going to reach us. We may deserve it by all that, but maybe we're just in the wrong place. Or whatever, we'll be too busy, or, you know, we won't quite finish in time, or, you know. Does that make sense to you? We all have our little ways of doing it, don't we? And so you understand the image of the broken pillar. And what you're doing with Tantra is you're imaging the rebuilding of the pillar that reaches from heaven to earth. You're imaging that because that is what we are going to do. That is the awakening. And so you start to construct it with your mind. It's like, you know, when I have taught meditation sometimes to people who are in wheelchairs, and one person I really thought that they needed to do a walking meditation when they're in a wheelchair, and so I had them visualize walking. And the whole circulation in their legs and their back all improved. Their bed sore started disappearing. We were both quite shocked. Jeez, look at that, your bed sores are... Move your mind there. It will have an effect. So you begin to visualize the path to awakening by imaging a deity figure that has all of the symbolic adornments of awakening. Maybe they have four arms, in which case it's the deity figure with two arms out, two arms in. It's the deity figure that represents how to manifest the four boundless states in the universe, and therefore that is compassion. Chenrezig is about intent, how to utilize intent for the benefit of all beings, loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, knowing each of them and how to use them, sympathetic joy and equanimity within, loving kindness, compassion, and beautiful, isn't it? So every one of the different deities in the Tibetan tradition and in other traditions in Japan, other traditions of Vajrayana, China, and at various places where they use the Vajrayana. All of those are basically, it's based on imaging the awakening and for a different path. For some people, going up by the way of the four states, loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity, is the closest to the way their psyche will unfold. So that for them would be called Yidam. Yidam basically means kind of like your interest, if it were going to be deified, the interest, this natural talent of your being, or guardian angel, or something in between those two. Somewhere in between guardian angel and interest. That's what Yidam is. It's like the natural, the kind of whoever made you. If you were going to make an archetypal personification of the path that would be right for you to take, it would be that. Like, for example, for this being the Yidam, it's Manjushri. Manjushri is all about discrimination. Would that surprise you? Very good with speech. Would that surprise you? And if there isn't real work with compassion, Manjushri can be very, very biting and very, like, likes to play the point on others, you know, cruder. So for my sins, I have quite a few years left to do teaching using speech in other ways. Whenever I meet anybody who's really sarcastic, I always think, oh, how fortunate I am, it's coming back to me. I deserve it. Oh, goody. Clean that bit of crap. Yeah. So we all have a talent. There's nothing wrong with any of us. We all have the awakening principle. And if you don't want to do it with, in terms of the deity yoga, then certainly in Buddhism as well, and you're interested in Buddhism, then certainly the work with the Theravadin system is equally powerful, equally valid, and will take you exactly to the same place, regardless of the infighting between groups. And when I was in Japan, I had teachers coming up to me and saying, you know, Zen is the only way. And they were great teachers. They were like really great teachers. I am so grateful for the teaching I received from them. And I had no question whatsoever of my gratitude or of their worthiness. When I was sitting in Thailand, I had teachers coming up to me saying, you know, Theravadin is the only way. And they were such great teachers, such wonderful teachers. And more than one in both those places. I have studied with more than one teacher. And this one, and you know, some of them, the teachers themselves did not say that, but all the students would come around and say to me, oh yeah, you know, this teacher is the only real teacher. That one is the only real teacher. Have you ever heard that kind of stuff? Because when one has had some profound experience of transcendence, it is true that the sense of self is totally demolished, no longer exists. And the teaching is very clear from such a person. But there is still a kind of a very subtle identity, which is called conceit in Buddhism, to the way that that experience arose in one's life. So they can understand exactly why, if you do these things, it leads to this. They can even also understand alternate ways to do the same principle. But if something is coming from a totally different direction, it looks wrong to them. They don't know that that works. They do know that they've watched people go crazy from doing practice, you know? So they're saying to you, no, no, really, stick to this. I know this is the way. Here is this huge quagmire, and this is one sure path. I know this path, stick to it. This is the way. But then I'm in another village, and they have a path, too, but this is the way. Every one of them is right. Every one of them is fine. And if you do hop from path to path, you don't make very great progress. Some paths are easier for some people than they are for others, you know. Some paths lead through a little bit of, like, you know, the perfume of some flower some people are allergic to. Other people, you know, they just get totally stuck on it, so they sit there smelling it and never take the path, you know. They're like, so that, you know, you need to check. There is no teacher that is, you know, not valid. There is no such thing as an invalid teacher. There's an invalid student. Student who doesn't have the honesty to tell the teacher what they think. I have this group of friends in Canada who are very kind to me, and every once in a while I really have to put them through their paces. I have to say, well, what are you doing for me? Are you telling me what I'm doing wrong? Oh, you're supporting me. Well, thanks. Are you supporting me verbally? Are you supporting me with questions? Are you supporting me by telling me when you don't like my teacher? Are you going complaining with somebody else? I'm supporting you by telling you the best I can. Are you supporting me by telling you the best of your experience you can? Do you understand this? We keep each other honest. Don't we? Don't we? We need that. That's like important. And especially if you don't expect everybody to do the same. Because we're not. Except we are, but we're not. And there are five different types of beings. Speaking of three, and 11 directions. You know what the 11 directions are. Above, below, in front, behind, right, left, four quarters, and inside. Eleven dimensions. And five types. My teacher is whoever is teaching me something. A curb can be a teacher. You step off the curb, and the curb is just taught you gravity. You say, oh, thank you very much. I kind of forgot gravity there for a moment. I'll try to redo all the old gravity, old gravity, old gravity. Oh, you really want to do it, you go, oh, gravity, gravity, maha gravity, oh, gravity, oh, oh. You don't know these things. That's what you have to learn that's important. And whether that translates you, offer it back. Thank you for teaching me that. I didn't get this. Oh, you mean you can't teach that? Is that why you're yelling and screaming and beating me over the head with a broom? Because you actually feel like you can't teach that and you don't want to talk about it. Oh, okay. Thank you very much. For what you have taught me, I'm very grateful. Now I'm going up the road because I need to know. No bad mouthing. Is that clear? Some of the people that have been my teacher, nobody else would call them a teacher. I'm not even sure I would want anybody else to go study with them. To me, they were the gift they gave is the truth. You have to. You could get to the point where everywhere you go, there's a teacher. Don't you think so? Doesn't that make it easier? Talk about roots. Talk about root guru. Wherever you go. But then I'm a green type. Huh? I'm a green type.
I'm green?
Yeah, of course. Everywhere I go, I'm looking at your guru. So you can stand up and stretch for a couple of minutes and sit down again and then do the last exercise. This one is an exercise which is basically taken from Sultan Alioni for teaching, as you know, one of my heroes in a woman in Buddhist tradition who is using the Buddhist tradition in a most useful way in Tibet. She wrote a book called Wisdom of Wisdom, Women of Wisdom. Do you know that book? And what I'm going to use here is actually from the introduction to that book. So you're not going to want any papers and pencils. Once you've written down Sultrim, S-U-L-T-R-I-M, which is a Tibetan name. Alioni, A-L-L-I-O-N-E, which is an Italian name. A-L-L, Sultrim, P-S-U-L-T-R-I-M. Alioni, A-L-L-I-O-N-E, and she's an American who went to India and was ordained by Swami Vishwanatha Paramahansa, did a lot of retreat work there, then moved to Italy, married an Italian named Mr. Alioni. They gave him the name Sultrim by the Swami Vishwanatha Paramahansa. Working at her second day teacher, Nantai Norbu, a Nyingma teacher, and studied with him for a long time and then moved to the States and has started a meditation center called Para Retreat Center in a very beautiful area of the States. And in the meanwhile, she wrote this book called Women of Wisdom. And I was fortunate enough to meet her shortly after she wrote this book. In the States, in Four Corners, it's called, where Four Corners, Four States comes to get, you know, Four Corners? Yeah. So it's an amazing area, and you got all kinds of really great teachers there, and all kinds of scam artists, and lots of UFO sighters, and get into what everything there. You've got artists, colonies, and writers, and, you know, people who have not left the 60s, nor do they plan to, raising their children the same. Very interesting, really. I think George Bush is actually from there. Is that true, you think? Oh, he's from Florida. So you're sitting there. You notice that. You know what you're sitting there? Good, eh? See how many you're successful at this. Simple, isn't it? And in front of you is this being. She's a goddess. She's a bikini. And she's got this kind of you can't tell whether she's blue or white, or maybe cloud covered. She's sort of, her skin kind of is sort of shifts around between different colors. And when you meet her, you get this feeling that, you know, it goes from being very, very closed in to an expansive kind of mind, and it was the same. You know? And she's sitting in front of you, and you get the feeling too that if you get focus on her too much, you might just get spaced out. So it's a kind of dull, kind of focus there somehow. And you feel that possibility too. And we go almost that by being in her presence, you could just let your intelligence just dissolve into that space of her. Just go to sleep and not notice anything. She has this kind of quality that can make you forget how to, you know, well, it's not important to wash dishes, or, you know that thing? Or? Take care of myself, you know, nothing is more valuable than anything else, kind of like. Unrefined state, she's a slob. And she's slob energy conscious. In living in her house, it's easy to become a slob. If there isn't any direction, I think the truth is important, you know what I'm saying? There's a kind of a dullness that just, after a while, the dullness is so profound that anything other than the dullness is too much effort. She's sitting in front of you. By the same token, if you focus her and actually purify that from trying to create comfort for yourself, but see that as a talent and a power, suddenly space opens up. And suddenly there is the ability to hold, manifest, contain, dance with, support any possibility. And go from being that what's the use to the perfect contour of any state, any place, any time. And this is her kind of, that's why she shimmers between light blue and dark blue, between cloudy, thunder cloud, and beautiful sunny day. Her whole energy is shifting like that. And she's sitting right in front of you. And she is the first messenger that is coming to you. She is the first of the five goddesses who has a gift for you. You're just going to meet them first. We'll decide about the gift later. Okay? Is that good? You got a feeling of her? So sit there where you are and open yourself to her and feel her and feel how you use her and how you know. And have a sense of intimacy. Now imagine you make a 90-degree turn to your right, that you imagine that you've just swiveled yourself around 90 degrees. And there is the second zucchini, and she is like, you can't tell whether she's gold or yellow, but she keeps flashing with energy. And every once in a while, from her pores, you almost see as it's sweat, but no, it's diamonds. And, you know, her teeth are, she's like so rich. Her skin is so opulent, like rich cream. It's like incredible. Everything about her seems to create a sense of joy, of richness. Like her breath or the energy, the smell of her skin is almost like a flower garden. You know, there's a whole opulence just by being anywhere near her. You also have the feeling, if you're not careful, she's gonna, that perfume is gonna take right over and smother you, or that her skin or her being is just gonna grow so that it totally eats you up, like that she's never going to be satisfied, and no matter what happens, she's gonna, you ever have that feeling in your own being? Or that she's going to hold everything so tight that she's never going to let it go. You have a feeling of miserly or greedy kind of energy as well. So there's this kind of quality to her. Everything has to be for her. Everything has to be for her. Whenever she does have anything that doesn't satisfy her, she reaches for the next thing. Or when she, the energy is properly focused, no matter where she is, it's a jewel. Wherever she is, everything is in it. So again, those are the polarities within it too. That everything has to be for her, and she can never become rich. Or no matter where she is, everything is in the to the person of her that causes everything to change, or she is never going to have the right person. Sense of the relationship. One more 90-degree turn. There's this warmth as you start turning. You can almost feel this, like magnetic energy, warmth. It's like really powerful, like as if you are the most wonderful thing in the world. And you turn around and you get this feeling of this absolute desire to be at one with you coming at you, and this kind of a rosy, red, joyous, ooh, yeah, oh, man, finally, you're here, and pass me off. Yep, yep. Feeling, I've absolutely been drawn in by this absolute passion for you that you feel. Being is just willing to take you whole. To take you whole. But if there is anything that you hold back, then all of a sudden that warmth will just hold. Powerful. Open energy that will just totally, totally turn into a person. maybe there's just like absolute acceptance, or you're just right in the middle step. You're just moving one step, and all of a sudden, the whole thing is done. The energy is flaring. When that is used properly, no matter where or there, what the circumstance, it just becomes a steady, clear, warming flame, no matter what it is, always being able to find the point of love. Not dissolving, not being present. Nothing like that. There is no place for that to not be there. My energy is the energy of all the energy. And all is energy. When you use properly, that is the acknowledgement of the bond between us. One last thing. There's a thing that it's like green, but like green like a peacock, you know, or like some of the magpie feathers, you know, where it's like shades off into other shades as you're looking at it. And it's always moving. The color is always moving. Like it's almost like the color itself is rippling, and there is also this figure. You can't tell where they are in space. It's almost like they're waving in and out of space. There's a sense of them always moving, always dancing. Maybe they're manifesting, maybe they're just going out of manifestation. And maybe even not exactly looking at you, just sort of looking off to the side, checking to see whether everybody else is looking at them too, whether somebody's talking to somebody somewhere else, whether isn't something happening over there, you know, is this where it's really happening, what's going on anyway, energy of like the wind, you know, the kind of moving around. And am I missing something? And the feeling that, you know, like, oh wait, I gotta know what's going on there, kind of paranoia about maybe this isn't where it's at, and how do I stay in control? Do you know something I should know? And I have to know everything I have to do. Look, I'm the one you tell first. Don't tell this to anybody else. Talk to me first. The quality of like, I've got to hold all the power here and got to keep moving to stay on top of it. And you never run too fast if you're trying to stay in one place, you know, on top. And that kind of quality, and if you really pay attention to it, and you really actually just focus deeper than all those plots and subplots and who did what to who and all that, you focus a little deeper, and then you let go of that grasping quality of it, and you open it up, and it becomes the waves and ripples of the cosmic advancing through the universe, the activity of all things moving towards the past, the non-separation of the earth and the universe. The clarity that all movement is awakening, all activities is compassion. And we actually acknowledging of that, so the willingness to trust all things has taken us to the awakening. Being able to see how all activities is compassion. And therefore to go with all beings desire pleasure, the greatest pleasure is awakening. There is only one thing all beings are doing. And now, of course, you turn your eyes around and look at you, look at you. And you notice that looker is looking for, you know, exactly this point. Okay, well, where's the trick? Okay, well, what's going on? What you already know. What is being left out? What's being left out? Oh, I would have said it this way. This is a kind of sharpness of, oh, well, you know, maybe if you put it this way. Well, I don't do it quite that way. I go this way. Kind of quality of accuracy and maybe whatever it is I'm saying doesn't exactly say what you feel. The fear of like, well, yeah, but what about if it is, or no, let's just get this right here. And not wanting to just be led down where just because I'm speaking that you're supposed to follow, like, you know, let's not just go for just anything here, no surprises here, I want to be sure about what I'm getting here. So like a sort of a coolness or over a heat or whatever it is, called hot and cold hell, you know, is what it's called. And this kind of quality of wanting to keep a watch on it, like watching everything through a mirror. Like one new move that you can keep your eye on the mirror. Where or if that is, so there's like always the concept and the intellect kicking along as well as the experience. I have to be trying to systemize things. Oh, well, this is this and that's that. And the system actually gets us split off that there's a really good relationship where you actually are. Or looking in, looking out, and just taking whatever is present and using it as an offer out of kindness for the benefit of others. Not trying to change anything, everything is the offer out of kindness for the benefit of others. Everything is the return of the offer. Identify the feelings. Identify three things that you have as your power. These are your power. These are the ways you work for it. In front of you is the beginning, the beautiful beginning of faith. Wisdom, security. Either dull, closed in, sleep, or spacious, conscious, whatever form. If you have a gift. The element earth, the beginning of earth, wisdom of equanimity, wisdom of equanimity, nothing arises, every action will have this moment of life. The richness of energy. Not just trying to hold something and get rid of it. Not caught in pride or whatever. Nothing arises in that moment. Wisdom of fire, the beginning of fire. Wisdom of beginning, because when passion is worth talking, you could see the relationship between others. Don't just go for the easy relationship. All accomplishing it. All moving. All accomplishing. The word that is continuously taking on stuff. All activity moving towards it. We're trying to control it. For power, for I. For rendering the totality of me. We have a destiny. Center is yesterday, is mirror like this. How you see. Water. Trying to take things apart, get rid of those that take them. Enjoying all things, you know. Kindness. Decide which one of them has gifts, or maybe all of them. I'm aware of how many beings my mother found this sister's child. Living their lives without any understanding there's more to do than the act of circumstances. Most people don't even know of the act of circumstances. Caught in an endless round, pushed by the wheels of satisfaction, trying desperately for happiness, without knowing the causes, blindly searching for a way to free of suffering, or performing the causes that create the suffering. Bound by their own ignorance, pushed by the negative values of the disease, that they don't know how to work with. Animals, humans, elementals, God, yeah, hungry souls, past, yeah, all the difficulties, higher costs, and ignorance. Wishing that there was some way holding a sense of the refuge above your head with the power of the gifts you have received from the beauty. Feeling, having a clear sense of the refuge above you. And so now I will do whatever I can to bring happiness and the cause of the happiness and relieve suffering and the cause of for all things. It is for this purpose that I am practicing this. These teachers, students, for the practice, their success, help me. I ask.